Previously on 24.
Abu Fayyad, a citizen of your country, enters the United States, detonates a nuclear bomb, killing thousands. Next, Assad attempts to assassinate the president.
You know fully well that we have cooperated with you since the inception of this crisis. I had an understanding with your president.
And now you're gonna have one with me.
You help us find those nukes before another goes off, or I'm gonna unleash the full power of our military on your country.
I'm terminating the American. Do you confirm?
Yes.
The American has shot Vasily. He's in the basement.
Shut down the phone lines. DSL, everything.
Morris is Jack. I know how to find Gradenko. Morris.
Jack?
Jack?
Jack Bauer is currently being held captive in the Russian consulate. Doyle will help you put a tactical profile together for an assault on the consulate.
Our primary objective is to abduct Anatoly Markov, the consul. Now, according to Jack, Markov knows how to find Gradenko, who controls the remaining three suitcase nukes.
The Americans are coming in.
I thought you had that under control.
It won't be long before they have your position.
This drone is ready to launch. Arm the bomb.
What's going on at the Russian consulate?
Jack Bauer is still at large and somewhere inside. We have to go in.
Jack Bauer, you need to contact Bill Buchanan. Tell him that Fayette and Gradenko are in the Shadow Valley.
Patch me in with Buchanan.
The following takes place between 7 p.m. and 8 p.m.
Well, I'd like to introduce my friend Marisol Nichols.
And I would like to introduce my friend James Morrison, also known as Bill Buchanan.
Honored to be here with you.
I am honored to be here with you.
Nadia Yasser. Okay, we're underway. Jack, I guess, has just stormed the Russian consul. Oh,
that's right. This was Rick's second show with us, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I think like you introduce him to everyone in the last episode, and this is right, because Doyle, and then the next thing you know, he's
Ricky.
Exactly. The Ricker, as my friends call him.
Who's this white-haired man?
That would be Powers Booth, who I have a mad
crush on. Oh, no, I'm talking about this one.
Oh, him! Look at that sexy man on the bottom of the screen there.
We're redirecting satellite coverage over the Mojave Desert and the Air Force.
Who has no idea what he's saying?
That's not true. I was in the room. That's true.
all his lines are like written on the window. And
thank God for those things, right? And I'm always telling the camera guy, are you going to go down to the computer? Because my lines are written there. If you're not going to go down.
Stop. You don't do that.
No. Never. I remember actually after my second episode filming and I saw another cast member had those things. I had the lines pasted on the computer. And I was like, we can do that? I was like, great.
You know, a funny sort of anecdotal drone excursion here, if you don't mind.
Mm-mm.
One day in L.A., we had a really windy day, and it was garbage day. And a lot of people's recyclables got blown all over the place,
mm-hmm.
down the street, you know, on the roofs and the trees. My next-door neighbor came over and with a note card that had my lines on
You're
it
from,
about the drone, and they said, I'm really disappointed that now I know there's something about a drone coming up. You've spoiled my surprise.
Yeah, I have friends that won't run lines with me or help me in any way because they don't want to know anything. Which I think is cool.
I have a manager that won't speak to me about the show. So I never talk to them anymore. I'm employed and they don't want to know anything about my job, so we never talk.
Actually, my manager just called me last night. He's like, if you get together with Rick Schroeder, I am no longer going to manage you. He's pretty upset.
Wow.
I know.
Shoot it down before it reaches its target.
Launch the drone. You'll execute it.
You know, when we were doing looping, the actor that played Gradenko came into loop, and he had that scruffy beard, and he wasn't dressed in a suit. He was, like, in jeans and some kind of sweatshirt, and I thought I hadn't seen, you know, because we don't film with these guys yet, so I hadn't seen the actor yet, and he comes in, and he's like, hey, how you doing? I didn't know. I thought he was like it was bad. And they're like, he plays Gridenko. I was like, oh, hi, sir. Nice to meet you. But it's odd. Like, you see all these other scenes and you don't meet any of the actors.
Oh, no.
You have no idea.
I think I've seen Peter McNichol 3 times.
Yeah, me
all
too.
All season, which is a shame.
Yeah.
I've seen Jane a few more times because...
she comes on our set.
Yeah. For the off-camera stuff. Oh, here she is.
Oh, look, there he is. As soon as we make visual contact, we'll uplink a real-time feed to your command.
Just get me that intel, you see. Lives are at stake.
Yes, sir.
You know that... remember when you kissed that him? Remember that? That was kind of a hot kiss.
You know, I thought it was... I just ran into Joel, and he said it was... He's like, the kiss.
I think it was one of those MTV award-winning kisses.
I liked the kiss. I thought it came off... I was like, wow, it came off really, really cool. And it's funny because I've known Eric Balfour for about 10 years. So, it took me a little while to get over, like, he's leaning in to kiss me. It's Eric. Oh, my God.
Oh, you were kissing your brother. So.
It was weird, yeah.
It's not a glitch, Milo. Nadia's been working with your user ID, so unless she stole it, you gave it to her.
Milo was just trying to help me do my work. Homeland Security sent down an order restricting my security access because I was born in the Middle East.
I've heard of that directive, and I think it's wrong for us to be racially profiling our own agents, but it's still a felony security breach for you to be using Milo's code.
She's so beautiful.
I was so tired. I think that was a 5:30 in the morning scene. I can always tell.
This one?
Mm-hmm. An early, early morning scene. I can always tell because my eyes are a little bit, like, half open.
Yeah, I get, I have some kind of an allergic reaction to CTU. seriously, my eyes get puffy and red.
I believe it.
I don't know
it's
if it's...
It's pretty enclosed in there.
It's a tomb.
Morris has a satellite visual on Shadow Valley. Looks like the terrorists have launched a single drone. I'm conferencing with General Walsh now.
I think this was the line that I gave away to my neighbor.
Put General Walsh through.
Sir, you're on with Bill Buchanan.
This is Walsh.
Do you remember the first time I called the White House for Bill Buchanan? He's like, Nadia, get me the White House. And I couldn't say his name correctly. I think I was just nervous. It was my first or second day. And I'm like, I have Bull Buchanan calling. Remember that?
Bull Buchanan.
I have Bull Buchanan calling for the president. Mm-hmm. I just had to do like 3-4 times.
That was Bill's nickname in college, actually. Bull.
Bull. Yeah. Buchanan.
Yeah.
Bull.
Los Angeles, that's a 4-minute window.
Maximum airspeed of an RQ-2 is 400 miles per hour.
I remember this scene going, wow, you're trying to interpret where a nuclear bomb is going to hit. And then we were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then we lose it. I'm like, we're not very good.
Well, you can't win them all.
You lose one, you lose them all.
But, you know, the great thing about this is that we really have no competition. I mean, it's not like the...
We're the only people that you can hire.
The counter-terrorist group down the block is going to win the contest. You know, we're really all we've got,
exactly.
So...
Yes, I've accessed our connection to CTU.
I've disabled their tracking capability.
He's so good. The actor that plays Gridenko?
No. And I'll be able to keep it hidden from their set.
I heard that they actually cut off his arm for that thing.
I heard that was a request from him.
Because he wanted to
keep it real.
Wanted to go all the way.
Exactly. And there's Peter. Powers was amazing. He was so good. In the later episodes when he takes over the presidency, you just hate him. He's so, so good. I didn't know who he was, and I met him at the TCA's. John Cazar introduced me to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, this is Powers Booth. And I was like, nice to meet you. And then I'm like, oh, hi.
You forgot he was on the show?
I forgot that he was Powers Booth. I was like, oh. Because I hadn't seen any of his stuff yet.
Oh.
And yeah.
What is she thinking when she looks at him like that?
I'm going to have an affair with his character.
You want it to happen?
Right away.
See?
I don't know.
Assembling the Joint Chiefs.
I warned the ambassador, Tom. You heard me tell him that I'd hold his country responsible.
You know what I wondered is, in the beginning when I got hired and they were talking about our relationship between Nadia and Bell, and there was this whole thing about how you hired me and how there was this whole backstory. Do you remember ever talking to Howard about it?
Mm-hmm.
And we know it was interesting because just knowing that the scenes that we've played together, we've all always had that in the background, but we've never actually did the scene,
right,
of why he hires her and why he goes to bat for her and all that stuff. But it was kind of neat because it was kind of underlying
it. It was always there,
wasn't it?
Yeah. They're really bright guys, those guys upstairs.
Yeah, I think they know a thing or two about
a thing or two.
What they're doing.
They know a thing or two about a thing or two. But what they really know about is chemistry between people, and they know that if it's going to be there. I think they really have a beat on that. And they are so bright that they then exploit that.
That chemistry between people. Oh, that's interesting. It makes sense.
I mean, I've noticed that in the last couple of seasons that I've been here. It's pretty, they're pretty insightful.
Is that how you and Jane Atkinson ended up? They go, okay, great, let's make these, now these two have been married. Is it because of the chemistry that you two had before in the past seasons?
Yeah, that was partly that. And, well, we knew each other going in.
Confirm that Nest teams and first responders have deployed in those cities. Morris, make sure the Air Force prioritizes their search on that basis.
Yep.
Give me the projected coordinates.
Bill, did we pick up Grudenko?
We're working on it.
Bill, what happened?
Grudenko escaped, but not before launching one of the drones.
You know, I was just thinking about sometimes when we're, because you mentioned what Howard told you about the backstory, and sometimes we're, you know, you'll be walking down a hallway and you'll run into Howard in a minute, and he's so generous, he'll just like start puking things about the story, you know, or about what's coming up, or your character, things that he's been dreaming about, or whatever, things they've been discussing. And then some of them come to fruition in the script and some of them don't.
Yeah, it's true.
And you mentioned that he had mentioned to you something about backstory and stuff, and like what?
What the backstory was?
Yeah, what did
he had this whole analogy of that you were sort of a mentor, sort of father figure, which I always thought played in our scenes as well underneath it. But that from what I gathered, it was that you sort of took her under your wing from the beginning, from wherever we were beforehand, and helped train her and guide her and get her to where she was. But there was this fighting the whole instinct that you had on the fact that she was Muslim and trying to prove like, no, it doesn't matter, and da da da, and going sort of against that and believing in me and fighting for me the whole way.
Oh, that's right. Because he did mention that to me. He said, listen, if the season were about you, this is what it would be, but the season is not going to be about you, but you can think about this stuff. But, you know, I remember him saying more of a big brother figure than a father figure, because
maybe I just dubbed that in. Sorry.
But no, I mean, I...
Older brother.
Thank you.
Older brother. Yeah. Definitely.
There you go.
Older brother. There we go.
But it's true that I could probably be your father. Maybe I end up
being your father. No, just a figure. Mentor.
Oh, the guru.
Exactly.
The dispeller of darkness.
But, you know, it's kind of true because when in a couple episodes from the one that we're watching now, where you turn over CTU to me for that time being. First of all, we didn't know how long that was going to be.
Mm-mm.
We didn't know if it was going to be one or two episodes or how long. And the whole time, even as an actor and as Nadia, it was, okay, what would Bill do? What would Bill do? Like, really? For me, even when I was playing it, I'm like, how do I run this thing? Like, there's the first scene where I'm in the Situation Room and conferencing and walking back and forth and pacing and answering all this information that is happening out there. And my whole thing at first was, okay, we'll just be him. Because even in real life, I think that when you get thrown into situations that you're not expecting and you have to sort of rise above it, you have your idea of how it should go or what you should be like to assume the position in that role. And so even as Nadia and as Marisol, that was my sort of thing. Of like, okay,
you were trying
I'll just
to,
do that.
You're trying to channel Bill.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
I was trying to do that with Nadia, too, that time I told you I dressed up in in women's clothes and sat in the torture room.
Right.
That was a foolish thing to do, and I'll never do it again.
What I didn't understand is why you were torturing yourself.
Yeah, well, because I wasn't about to let some guy... I mean,
because that would be wrong.
But, yeah, I mean, putting high heels on is fine, but, you know, letting Ricky, you know, slap me around, that would be wrong.
Right. He told me when he was doing that scene, actually, that he was picturing you.
He didn't say
in
that.
In the wig.
Did he?
And
no, he didn't. what are we missing here? Oh, they're probably setting up some kind of a romantic. Oh, he's looking
look
at
that.
He's,
look at that. Look at Oh.
He's shooting.
Vice President Daniel's going to get his groove on.
He's casting his hook out there for the.
That's right.
Big blonde fish there.
That's right. And then well, no,
and of course I'm talking about power, so suddenly I became a Texan. That was weird.
Is he from Texas?
Oh, yeah.
Mm. I became all street. Did you hear that? Yeah. Get your groove on? Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, because that's the way he rolls, you know. There she is.
It was so funny meeting Jane and meeting you for the first time, because Jane is so intense and serious and such a strong female character in the show. And then I meet her for the first time, and she's on set. She's like, hi, how are you? And she's like in these little pink sweatpants, and oh, my husband's gonna come today, I'm so excited. And just like this bubbly,
yeah,
bubbly, full of life woman. And you as well, that I've said even in interviews or whatever, it's you're so serious in the show as your character. And obviously when we have so much at stake, but in between takes and the little songs that we're pudding and fruit and little songs and little dance what? Jigs that you're doing
pudding
in between
fruit.
Takes.
Yeah, that, I know. That was a high point.
It was.
That was a song that I made up about Mary Lynn and Carlo.
Pudding and fruit?
Yeah.
And who was pudding and who was fruit?
Well, Mary Lynn, of course, was pudding.
Pudding. And Morris was fruit.
Well, you know, she was eating pudding. She was eating a...
Oh, was that what it was?
Yeah, she was eating a concoction from the kitchen. So I started singing about it, which is, I think, how all the great songs were actually written. Somebody will see something. John Lennon would see, sitting around one day, and he went, imagine what it would be. Imagine what it would be like if... imagine. You see?
Right.
So I was sitting there going, pudding and fruit.
I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it. But so the audience knows we were sitting in the Situation Room in between takes. And the Situation Room is the room where Bill Buchanan is on the phone with the president and usually the military and this and that all at the same time. And it was in between takes and you were in the corner. I remember this. And you started dancing. Literally, it was a jig. It was a jig.
Really?
Dancing a jig and singing pudding and fruit. And I was like, oh my God.
What have I gotten myself
it was great.
Into?
No, it was great. It was great.
So, I was just thinking about, speaking of nonsense, you didn't really go into detail. Oh, you did. Actually, you talked about my being your father figure. Yeah.
Or mentor or big brother.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
But it's true. I mean, I thought about it, and it was like, how would she have gotten into the position that she's in? And she would have had to have somebody believe in her on the way and fight for her to get into that position, being A, a woman, B, Pakistani.
The thing That's about huge. This, too, is that when you're in the situation with nuclear bombs flying,
mm-hmm.
you can't really take the time in CTU to talk about this in much depth because, you know.
There's no time.
All you can really rely on is the fact that when it happened the same way last year with Sean Astin,
mm-hmm.
we came up with a really interesting backstory and stuff.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and you know, really, who cares but us?
Well, even with Rick's character, they're like, in Denver. And I mentioned it again in the torture scene. I'm like, yeah. I know what you did in Denver.
Yeah.
Do you have any clue what he did in Denver?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yes, pull the beans.
Yeah.
What did he do?
No, I can't talk about that.
Did it involve animals or anything?
No, it was completely benign. It's a big deal about nothing.
Okay. He's making it up as you go
know.
Along.
I Everybody, aren't we all? Aren't we all?
Yes, we are. I can't believe how quickly you turned in this episode, though, against me. But then
It wasn't that. It was just that there was a little bit of a glitch in the thing, so we had to take the glitch out, I didn't think there was a bad, I hope you didn't take it personally.
A little bit.
Did you?
A little bit. I was like, oh.
Nadia, I never got those SIM files you were gonna send me.
Oh, yeah, your system was overloaded, so I gave them to Morris. He's gonna take care of it for you.
Morris?
I remember this particular scene because I'm like, can I just step on the step? Because he's so tall, and I look like I'm looking up at him, and I look like a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to step up. See, look. Look at how far away we are.
Huh.
Those stairs, by the way, are the loudest stairs in the world. If you have heels, it's hell, like trying to go up there and trying to be quiet.
Have you ever fallen down them?
No.
Every time I walk down them, I fall.
Fortunately, we cut that out of the scenes.
Oh, yeah, because...
Nadia, can I...
It's so wrong for the character to stumble into the room. How seriously are you going to take him if you know you can't make it down the stairs?
I know. I was just so happy that they started giving me stuff to do because prior to this episode, there were like little things that I would do, but otherwise it was, Nadia, get me the president. Nadia, get me this. Mm-hmm. Nadia, I need your hair.
That's an important job, though.
Getting you the president?
Well, yeah. Isn't that sweet?
I love that scene. I thought it was great.
What was that for?
I love the scene where he took the drink and then spit it out.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
I particularly like the drilling in his back.
Yeah. Thank you. Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I'm sick like that.
Reveals.
I'm just kidding. I just thought it was really cool. It was an interesting way of hurting someone, I guess.
Of getting them to,
Yeah, what do you think about all that? I'm not even sure if we should bring this up or not.
Ooh, I mean, we
but
can't.
The whole torture stuff, it's like, please. Please, give me, it's a TV show, people. And there's that whole thing about, you know, the military taking their cues from 24. If our military is taking their cues from a TV show, we're in big, big trouble. Don't blame the TV show. Blame the guys that are in charge of the military. If they can't differentiate between a TV show and what they should and should not be doing, I think Abu Ghraib was done way before season 6 of 24 came out. That's just my opinion, but I think there was a bit of let's make 24 the scapegoat. What do you think?
I don't think it hurt.
What did?
I mean, I don't know. Anytime you're talking about something, it means it's in the consciousness of the. Yeah. I think it was an orchestrated thing.
You think it was planned?
I think somebody made a big deal out of it, so they would, yeah. Because if you don't want somebody to talk about something, you don't talk about it.
Right. But I don't get what that has to do with blaming. Like, what are you saying that they were blaming 24 on purpose to talk about torture?
No,
in
I'm
general?
Saying that whoever chose to respond to those accusations or that subject matter
mm-hmm.
decided that they wanted to keep the dialogue going.
Oh, going about it.
Yeah, it's PR.
Yeah, well, I also think, I mean, you have to respond to it, too.
Do you?
It's such a ridiculous, well, I guess you don't, but I always believe in that some things you can dignify and some things you can't. And with that, the comments that I heard back from Bob Cochran at any time or Joel Surnow that were written were like, it's a TV show. Like, sort of putting them in their place a little bit. Like, come on, take a look at this, people. We've been doing this for 6 years. It's not like this is the worst torture ever.
If I can't, even begin to get into how asinine I think most things are, because it's just not the place. I will say though that when Cheers was on, and all these alcoholics were sitting around the bar, you know, making fun of drink. I mean, you know, that was alcoholism is a serious, serious disease, and suddenly we're looking at these clowns in the bar drinking constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And they became these lovable curmudgeons that just drank a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
You see how absurd it is?
I like your use of curmudgeon, actually. You lost me after that, but I was like, wow, he used curmudgeon.
Yeah.
That was good.
Lovable. They were lovable.
Curmudgeon.
Yeah.
Curmudgeon.
I'm trying. The only way to cut the data flow is to reboot CTU's mainframe. Reboot without system power for more than 20 minutes.
Had you watched 24 before you got hired?
I watched one episode the night before I went in.
Oh, this is when yeah, you betray me completely.
Mm. Well, no, I'm just, you know, sweeping up the kitchen floor.
Right, because I'm dirt and stones in the way.
Doyle, damn it, that's enough!
During this scene...
Whose voice did they use there? It wasn't mine.
Oh, it was.
I think they used the voice of a 12-year-old girl.
Because this is looped right over here where it says, I'm not a traitor! I hated that. When I heard it later, I was like,
really?
Oh, I hate that. I was upset. I thought I would have liked Nadia to break away from those security guys back there and gone back in at Doyle. But everyone who watched it with me was like, no, no, she can't because it's too much. But I was like, I thought she went a little bit too easily. I thought they had her go too easily. Then again, it was told like if she would have fought back too hard, it would have looked like she was more guilty. So I don't know. It was just sort of when I watched it, I was like, oh.
Part of it, too, is that, you know, there's only 44 minutes to cram all this stuff into.
I know, but if I can write a whole symphony just for myself right there.
There you go.
It was really funny during that scene because Rick, this was his second episode, I believe. Mm. And so Rick comes up, and we had just really met, and he comes up, and he picks me up, and is shaking me. And do you remember that time? He picks me up out of the chair, and he missed. Then he let go of my shoulders, and then he went back in to shake me again, and he sort of brushed my breast, and then he lost it completely, and so they
of
cut.
Course.
It was pretty funny.
Of course he did.
I was like, Ricky Schroeder, fill me up.
I'm sorry.
Mad crush on Rick Schroeder when I was a kid
really?
From Silver Spoons. Mad
really?
Crush. You know what I was so happy about? Was being in the box. Like, you know, those four boxes? They go to
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was the coolest. That's all I look for. I'm like, oh, I'm in the box. I think it's badass being in the box, don't you?
It's a badass box.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, you had watched one episode before you got hired on 24.
I did, yeah, the night before I went in. I watched the one in season 3, I think it is, where Chappelle is killed. Have you watched it?
I tuned in a little bit on the first season, and then when I got hired, I got hired, and then it was a month before we were filming this season. Like, remember, like, they didn't get the CTU to the end of the month. So Howard had given me season 4 and season 5. So I watched half of season 4 and half of season 5. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that I hadn't watched it beforehand because I think it would have affected my audition a little bit if I would have known exactly what to expect and how it's supposed to go as opposed to just blah. You know, I auditioned 4 times for you guys.
For you guys? Liam lumping me in with them now? Hey, listen, I'm just
a series regular.
I'm just a worker.
I was not, just this year.
When they brought me your tape and they said, what do you think?
You're so full of it.
I said, listen, look at her. What do you mean? How could you even ask me that? You know what I'm going to say. I said, yes. I said, you know.
I'm rolling my eyes at you, and you can't tell in the commentary, but my eyes are rolling right now.
I watched a little bit of it just to see what, because I'd heard so much about it, and I thought, what's the tone? What's the, you know, is it it's real time, but is it realistic? I mean, there's so many things on TV that just barely resemble human behavior, you know? And I'm sure they're doing the best they can, but you'd like to see sort of what the tone of the thing is. And I got it. When they shot that guy, when Jack shot him, I just went, wow, these guys will do anything.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
So I sent my family to Hawaii where they were going. We were going on vacation.
Really?
And they went ahead of me. And I stayed behind. And I'm very, very glad I did.
That's good. We're all very glad that you did.
Thank you.
You know, I should mention this on just in general, but, and I've told you this before, but since we're being recorded, it's official. But again, thank you so much for making me feel so comfortable entering the show. It was a little, you know, daunting to show up on a show where it's been like, you know, everyone's known each other or at least the crew's known each other for 6 years. Mm-hmm. Everyone's been on the show before except for me. And to walk in, and I think my first scene was yelling at Chloe. And that whole thing with Jack. And
working with Mary Lynn can be terrifying. She's
terrifying, because then she's rolling her eyes at you while you're doing your thing. And she's like, yeah, and giving you looks like you are the stupidest person on the earth. And really?
No.
Oh, my God.
She's a sweetheart.
No. But the Chloe character.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's what I mean. But you were taking
Chloe's reactions.
Yeah, the Chloe's reactions, and you're trying to be this, and you're like, why are you?
Here it comes.
Uh-oh. We're not here to talk about
me.
about what you know.
I don't know anything.
Okay. I kept telling Rick, I'm like, you actually have to grab my hair. You actually have to squeeze my neck, because he'd just go like this, like really lightly. And I'm like, Rick.
You wanted to hurt you.
No, I wanted him to
because
squeeze
you remembered
so that
you... when you saw him when you were little, and you wanted him to say call
no,
you the champ.
No, because the camera's right there, and I'm like, I can't fake you're barely touching my neck. I'm like, you're gonna see that I'm holding my breath, which I was holding my breath.
Yeah, you have to be careful. You have to be careful which actors you say that to. Cause...
Oh yeah, no, I told him. I said, look, I've worked with other actors who will go off and like really grab your arm hard and really hurt you,
rip out a chunk
of
hair.
But Rick was like the exact opposite.
Yeah.
The exact opposite.
Get out of here.
I liked that scene. They originally had Milo saying, I trusted you, I fought for you, how mm-hmm. could you do this, so that he actually thinks for a second that Nadia is a traitor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she says, get out of here. That's why the scene following this, she walks out and doesn't want anything to do with him and understands him, thinking that she's a traitor. And when they cut that out, I was like, oh. But I thought it still works, because you see the doubt, like a little bit of doubt in his eyes, that if she did do it or didn't do it.
Yeah.
But I was worried. I was like, "Wow, is that still gonna work?" Even though that's gone. But I thought it did still.
So here's where we've discovered what happened to Audrey.
I was just staring at Kiefer without his shirt on.
The hole in his body. Yeah.
Whoever's piloting the drone is operating in close proximity to CTU. I'm instituting a level 1 security lockdown.
But, yeah, back to what I was saying. You really did make me feel extremely welcome and comfortable my first day.
Oh, well,
the
good.
First couple weeks. So thank you very, very much, because that could have been a very hard situation.
What I like to do is, you know, be nice to people right off the bat, and then later on I just nail them.
Yeah.
When you get them vulnerable.
Well, I wasn't mentioning that because I wanted to, you know, make you look good.
Well, thanks.
But documentary.
I'm not afraid. I don't care what people think. I want them to know who I am, and I'm the kind of guy that'll, you know, draw you in and make you feel comfortable, and then just
put the knife in your back when you least expect it.
Yeah,
there you go.
You know, that's what life's all about.
We were asking.
Well, you know, though, in actual truth, I remember when I was an apprentice actor, and.
What's an apprentice actor?
When you're an apprentice in a Lort theater, a regional theater.
Oh, okay, yeah.
For 2 years.
Wow.
And there were some actors that would come in. It's where I met Jean Smart, 1978.
You're kidding.
Yeah, she came up from Seattle to do a play, Alaska Repertory Theater.
Wow.
And apprentices are pretty much there to do everyone's bidding, you know, nail straightener, strike the sets, get me a glass of water. And occasionally you get to do a scene or two, you know, work with the people that come in. But sometimes you're actually treated like just scum of the earth. Because people forget, you know, that anyway, so my goal then, I made a vow that I was going to treat on the set or everyone with respect, and it's amazing, you know, sometimes people are kind of surprised that, you know, by that, especially when apprentices, if you work in a regional theater and you treat the apprentices with respect as a peer, they go, don't you know who I am? I'm just, you know, I go, yeah, I do, actually.
Yeah, but like the apprentices or the PA on set or someone else, it's like they're still who they are, and in a year from now, they might take your job.
That's right.
Or they'll be the person writing the scripts in 2 years. Or
you never know.
And that's not a reason to be nice, but it's just a reason to treat people like human beings, regardless of their position or what post they're holding at that time.
When I first came to LA, I had a job delivering scripts for the agency I was with at the time. I was with Writers and Artists.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got this job, you know, driving scripts to the set of Bosom Buddies, you know, Tom Hanks and Peter Sklar. So I walked in and I think I gave Peter a script, and I said hello to Tom and left the lot, and I came back and I was talking to a buddy of mine, and I said, man, they were, you know, everyone was so nice to me on the on the lot, you know, on the set, the guards and the, all the, you know, the ADs and stuff. And I said, what's up with that? You know, they were nice. It was weird. And he said, well, because, you know, next week you could be their boss. They don't know who you are.
Oh, wow.
Of course, that's kind of cynical to look at it that way, but they were actually probably just nice people.
I think they were probably just nice people. I mean...
But that's sort of what you're saying. You never know. You never know who's going to... Why not treat everyone with respect?
Yeah. I mean, there's... I think that... I don't know about you, but I you know, did every job under the sun, from pumping gas to working at dry cleaners to working at gas stations to waitressing to telemarketing to drive-through window to everything.
And that's, I think, so weird. You should. I did every single job. I did every one of those.
Everyone that I just mentioned?
Yeah.
Even waitress?
Well, you know. Yeah. Is that's wrong? What?
But I think that... I mean, don't you think that coming from and having to work for a living and doing everything and working your way up the ranks makes you understand the position that other people are in, rather than if you're just sort of handed stuff on a silver platter, you can't have any reality with anyone else?
We're just workers. We're all just workers.
I'm out of a job in a month when we're done filming. No job.
If we're workers among workers, you can't lose. But, you know, I am too, as a matter of fact.
More power to you, man.
See you on the unemployment line.
Exactly. Exactly. But this has been the coolest that I've been on. Maybe it's just because it's been on 6 years and the crew, everyone's so confident in their job and their post and what they have to do, and just very...
It's a great set to work on.
So calm. I love it.
Beautiful people.
Don't turn the drone too sharply or it'll stall and you'll lose control.
Oh, like she knows how to drive a drone, right? Come on, Chloe.
Like I know how to type. If you really saw Nadia typing, it'd be, okay, shift, put the pointy finger on shift, and put the other pointy finger on I, space, two-finger typing.
I love this show so much, and this is going back to what you were talking about with the torture issue. This is a comic strip version of an action adventure, and it's a fantasy.
Mm.
So, of course, you're taking real-life aspects and it's making that comic strip... to make it, to give it elements that the audience can grasp and go, oh yeah, I relate to that. So suddenly we've decided that torture is the big issue, because it actually is in real life.
Mm.
And 24 then becomes the very first show that ever used torture as a dramatic device.
Right.
You know?
Mm.
And it's controversial. It's politicized.
It's so funny. It's like that controversy that was created by... probably one reporter who wrote a thing, when I'm going to do this, and then everyone else sort of jumped on the bandwagon.
But that's what I mean, that they should never have answered the charges.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
They should have just ignored them.
Maybe you're right. It's
because, you know, voices die when they don't get a response.
That's very true. I loved the piloting of this drone, and I was watching... key for work, and I was like, wow, is that like a joystick?
Yeah,
like, I remember that. Pong, Atari.
He's good at that. This is joystick acting.
Mm.
He's good at everything he does on the show.
Mm-hmm. I had my first scene with him a couple of weeks back. I was so nervous because it was, it was 6:30 in the morning, and you know how happy I am about those early morning calls. And it was just me and him in the... in holding, in the jail room, and actually in the room that I was interrogated in this scene. I was so freaking nervous. Oh my God, so nervous.
To work with Kiefer?
Yeah, because it was like, there's all this dialogue, and I'm being a jerk to him, because I won't let him out, and it's Kiefer, and it's 6:30 in the morning, and I hadn't worked with him yet, the entire season.
Really?
That was so my first scene couldn't have been like, you know, here's the piece of paper, sir, but it was this huge, like, one-on-one scene. I was totally nervous. But hopefully it turned out good, unless fired.
I'm sure it did.
And I don't know it yet, but I was nervous.
Get the Geiger counter.
I don't know how you can't not be for the first time. You know, with certain people that you have respect for, and it either shows on the outside or doesn't show on the outside, but on the inside it's like you have such respect for people's work that on the inside you're like, man, I better be good. I better know my lines. I better be on point.
Firsts can be... I did a scene once in my acting class after not being there for a while. I had the same teacher for years, and I afterward I said, you know, I was kind of a little nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, could you have been excited? And I said, wow, yeah, I was. I was really excited. He said, because sometimes, you know, we mistake excitement
excitement. Well, you can also have both at the same time.
Yeah, and it's
which
good,
I could
but
definitely attest to. It was definitely both. Nervous, excited.
Bill, what do you have?
I have nerves and I have excitement. That's what I should have said.
I have exciting nerves.
I'm excited. I'm so excited that this drone came down and it didn't blow up. That's what I should have said.
But in the process, the bomb's nuclear core was...
I'm giddy and I'm I don't know, I feel like singing and dancing. Well, I don't know. I probably did when we said cut.
You probably did.
It was an attack on our nation. Bill, are there casualties?
Here, you know, actually, I improvised a line there. I said, don't you talk to my wife like that. You.
Did it make it?
It didn't make it. In the thing.
I know, it took me probably like 10 episodes to realize we could add lines. Or change lines. You know, because every set is different. In some sets, they want you to say every single line that's written as written without changing an A and or a the. In other ones, like ours, they just want to make sure the main point gets across and it doesn't, whatever makes it flow better, which was really nice. But I remember it took me like 10 to go, oh.
Yeah, and they trust our instincts. As I said before, they're pretty bright guys. They hired us. They're pretty smart. That's the way I look at it.
I think they know what they're doing. They definitely know what they're doing. I just read episode 23. It's phenomenal. Did you read it?
Really? Yeah, I did.
I literally can't put it down. Like every other page, you cannot put it down. It's so good.
I liked it. Yeah, I liked it a lot. Well, you know, I get out.
I know. I love that you and Jack are together. I love that.
It's been so long since I flew a helicopter. It's nice to get back at them.
And you're out of CTU. I never left CTU at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun to be out.
That's nice. You started the season out, and you ended out.
That's
right. It's kind of cool.
That's right.
It's very cool.
The order's given.
There was one night where I actually did get to spend time with John Cassara Kiefer, and our music director, and he was phenomenal. I think his name is Sean. And Kiefer was like, this guy's a genius, because he creates, with that music, creates tension where there isn't any at all. And it's phenomenal. I remember watching the first episode when Jack comes out of the hangar for the first time, when you see him and the music just builds to this crescendo. And if it wasn't for that, it's like then you just got a guy walking down a plank. But it really was one of the things that I started to pay attention to as the season went on, how important the music is as far as building tension and just creating that atmosphere for the audience. It's pretty amazing how many things go into an episode to create that effect.
Okay, thanks, you guys.